The following is intended for mature audiences only. Discretion is advised.
So there was a lot to talk about for Florida. We were in Florida a lot. Let's start off with their sister. Hi. I don't know if she's getting better and more adapt to the car, but she's doing better in that if it's a long enough drive, she will eventually lay down for a little while at least. We did the drive from Orlando all the way to New Orleans, which was like 9 hours. And she definitely laid down and just went to sleep while the car was moving. I mean, way into the drive for about a half hour. But she still kind of gets up and meanders around and moves around and still pants enough. But what she does do that is helpful is that when we stop, when we pull over, when we get to our destination, she does calm down faster. Whereas before, she would still just be anxious for quite a while afterwards. So maybe she's adapting. Maybe she's getting better. I don't know. I will say this, a bunch of the hotels that we've been at, instead of giving me one king bed, because why do I need two beds? I'm one person. They've been giving me two queens instead, because that's all they apparently had. And that means sister gets her own bed, which she's starting to adapt to too, because she would not jump in the bed. She would wait to be given permission to give that. She's not really a bed dog. She's not really a furniture dog. Never really was, even at home. I mean, for the first year and a half, she never ever got on any of the furniture. And now she'll wait to be, you know, coaxed up to, you know, allowed, given permission to come up to couch to sit with me. But I would, you know, we'd come in, I was like, here, up, 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 get on the bed. This is your bed. You can sleep here. She'll still sleep on the floor. And I'm like, why don't you just get in the bed? But she's done a few times where she comes in and immediately goes right to the bed. So it's like, oh, well, she's learning something, I guess. I'm probably teaching her bad habits and I'll probably regret this. But she's comfortable. So we left St. Augustine and we went to Orlando. We spent 2 days in Orlando. We did three of the open mics there. Now, this is the first time I was in Orlando. I will tell you about the second time I was in Orlando. But the first time was Orlando seems like a city that can support comedy. I mean, I've been to Orlando comedy, done comedy in Orlando before when I came here in 2018 for Disney World with my family. I went and did a couple shows and mics during that week of that. So I'm already familiar with the area and the scene and some people. And there is a community of comedy going on in Orlando. So I did, first open mic I went to is this like very rundown, hole-in-the-wall, punk bar type place called Grumpy's. And I get there and the person who works at Grumpy's that's supposed to let us in forgot her keys. So we're waiting for the owner to show up. Or her boss, I don't know who the other person really was with keys to let us in. Already off to a bad start of, yeah, you're irresponsible enough to not bring the keys to let us in. Place is probably not going to be great. And it was disgusting inside, which is as expected. And it was all comedians. Maybe a few people came off the street and watched politely. But it was just exactly what you would expect. A thing I've been complaining about, just a bunch of comedians. I mean, the guy who hosts it kind of fosters a little more jovial atmosphere and people were having a little more fun. They were laughing a little bit. They enjoyed a few of my jokes.
So I do have diabetes. And I'm having a lot of trouble with the diagnosis. Reason being is because type 1 diabetes is a very serious and important medical condition. And type 2 diabetes is my fault. Right? But here's the good news is I don't have type 2 diabetes. I have a third option of diabetes. Did you guys know there's three types of diabetes? Why is there more types of diabetes than there are good Godfather movies? So I suffer from a type of... That was for the one old guy in the room. Sit around. I have a Lou Gehrig joke coming up for you, too, in a minute.
There's two of us over here.
I know you keep saying the two of you, but one of you is only one of you is hard of hearing. Anyway. And neither of your dicks work. Anyway. I am not going to be allowed back in the state of Florida after tonight.
I got a decent enough read off of them, I guess. But then I hung out I drank a beer in that place, and thank God I did not order a drink. I don't trust their cups, but I got a, what did I get? I had a Twisted Tea or a lemonade or something. I don't know. Something to support the venue, because that's what we do. I left there and I went to another one called at the other bar, which seems like the downtown Orlando area. Seems like the party strip where it's just like nothing but bars, which is the weird thing, because right in that square also is the Orlando Library, which didn't fit the motif of a bunch of bars. The other bar, there was a couple of people that wandered in because it's like the bar district. So there's drinkers walking around and got convinced to come in. And I will say this, one of the comedians basically, like the woman who was hosting it, guest hosting it, she's new to comedy, didn't know what she was doing, didn't really know how to host, didn't know how to interact with people. Just a dirty set for no reason. Like, again, no jokes, just like, her jokes were basically, so I'm Italian and I'm a whore and I like black dick. Like, that's, like, I guess the other side of admitting to being a pedophile is just like, I'm a woman and I like dick. Like, own your sexuality, that's fine. But these aren't jokes, just saying, isn't it crazy funny that I'm a white woman and I like black dick? No, that's, anyway. But one of the comedians, after people started coming into this open mic, took it upon himself to be like, hey, everybody, this is an open mic. Come to comedy. He did some crowd work and got people involved with the show, which made for a little bit better time for the other comedians, because he acknowledged the awkwardness in the room. He did some actually funny material, which is something I know to do, but I'm not going to waste my time doing it. I'm not going to waste 2 of my 5 minutes trying to hone people in by doing crowd work. I don't have that patience. I mean, bless his heart for doing it. I mean, he did it after I went up and did my set, but bless his heart for doing it. And the guy did a great job. I don't remember his name, but it's nice that somebody, you know, took it upon themselves. Somebody had some wherewithal of what the situation is and was able to handle it, which is one of the things you're not seeing at a lot of open mics or comedy shows in general.
I was like, yeah, hold on, let me go talk to a couple people. And so this is basically back in the day when the only way to get weed was you had to go talk to your sketchiest friend. And looking at some of the people in the room, your sketchiest friend is every black person you've ever met. So I go find the sketchiest guy in my neighborhood, who's a guy named Dave. So I'm going around the neighborhood trying to find Dave. And to describe Dave, Dave is basically, he looks like if Slash from Guns N' Roses fucked Slash from Guns N' Roses. He's just denim and hair. He's got a denim jacket, denim shirt, denim pants, denim top hat. How do you get it? I don't know. Is it custom order? I don't know. Anyway.
But it was that scenario where I talked to a couple comedians, but really wasn't that, I wasn't being that friendly. There was one guy I talked to a little bit, newer comic guy, seemed nice enough kid. You know, him and I talked a lot. But mostly like one word answers from me. All right, so I need to do more updates more often so they're not big, long diatribes. But I don't want to do them every night because it's going to be a lot of this in the hotel room or in the car talking. But I needed to do this update now because I needed to figure out what's going on. Why am I feeling depressed right now? If you're a longtime listener of the podcast, you know that I'm a huge advocate for mental health and taking the stigma out of it and making people feel comfortable talking about their mental health issues. So here I am talking about a mental health issue. I don't understand why I'm depressed right now, why I'm feeling depressed. I shouldn't. I have things, positive things to look into. Let's list the positives. I had 2 really great shows, Friday and Saturday in South Carolina. I should be riding off those highs. It was really good, man. It felt so good getting a good tape. It was really good to know that I performed well in front of other people who don't know me really beforehand. I think I made some really good connections with a couple of people that will benefit me in the long run, which is not the reason to do things. Like, I don't want to make friends just to exploit them. That's not, you know what I mean. Anyway.
pretty good day at the in St. Augustine. That was, you know, going to San Marco Fort. That was fun and interesting, and I enjoyed it. There's been, you know, murky weather, but the rain kind of barely rained at all. So why am I feeling this way? Well, let's look at the negatives. No, even the positives. I booked another really good show, or what should potentially be a good show. A friend of mine hooked me up with a spot on Saturday in Orlando that I'm excited to do. And my friend in New Orleans hooked me up with a show on the 20th, Monday the 20th in New Orleans. So I should be happy. Well, let's look at the negatives. One of my shows in LA is no more. And that a friend of mine's has a regular show on the last Tuesday of every month. I was looking forward to performing on her show again. I performed it last year. Really want to do it again this year. And she was like, yeah, no problem. Then she reached out like, hey, they moved my show from the last Tuesday of the month to the third Tuesday of the month. Are you still going to be here? Yes. And I already have a show that night. And I don't want to be problematic by switching nights. And they're not close enough to where I can go from one to the other. So I'm missing out on a show in LA. Not that big of a deal. Not losing money. Neither show pays. But I'm missing out on a gig. And I'm missing out getting to hang out with a friend. And former podcast guest, Sarah Godot. Godot. I don't know. Gal Godot. And then there's Godot. I don't know. Anyway, I know she. Anyway, Sarah, who was on the show. So it shouldn't bug me, but it does. Other negatives. I did two open mics here in Orlando. Did they go great? No. Did they go bad? No. They just were open mics. As a friend and former guest of the podcast, Dana J. Bine says, you didn't bomb at an open mic. You just did an open mic. Oh, they're fine. I did two different sets because I'm working on two different things. You know, one got more laughs than the other. Is that why I'm feeling this way? A friend of mine talks about how lonely the road is for him. And I felt very antisocial when I was waiting for the open mics. I got there super early. Nobody was around. I sat out. Sister and I sat outside the venue for over an hour, and finally somebody walked up, and I didn't really feel like talking to them. It was very, very unresponsive. Not like I ignored them, but I was just like one-word answers. I wasn't cordial. And why is that? I mean, I'll ultimately figure out why I'm depressed. That's the ultimate question of life. So what was causing this? There was even people that wanted to talk to me that made conversation with me, and I was aloof and standoffish, and I don't want to be aloof and standoffish. I like being outgoing. I like talking to people. I just didn't feel comfortable talking to people at these open mics. So did I not feel like talking because I was depressed, or am I depressed because I didn't feel like talking and I wasn't my usual self? I'm going to stay the night here. We're going to do one more open mic. Oh, and I booked another gig in Key West. Gosh, that goes back onto the list of things that I should be happy about. So in the next week, I have three solid confirmed gigs. Friday, Saturday, and Monday. In three different cities. So I should be happy. But why am I not? Is the loneliness of the road getting to me? Am I forcing myself into the trap of if I'm going to be lonely. If I am lonely, I'm going to continue to make myself lonely. You know what I mean? Like that, or there's that sometimes that you create a self-fulfilling prophecy. I don't deserve love, so therefore I won't let anybody love me kind of thing. He's up on love. Yeah, I get it. But you know what I mean? Like, if I don't feel like I deserve something, then I'm going to do everything I can to prove that I don't deserve it or to prevent it from happening. I don't believe I deserve happiness, therefore I'm going to make myself unhappy. Or do I just hate Florida?
I got a little bit out of that surprisingly confusing depressive funk, but not really. And I still don't know why. Like, the other thing about it is, like, I ate well, I was hydrated. Sometimes that can affect those moods. So I don't know what was going on with me. I'm worried that the road is getting to me. The weariness of being out on this, on the road and moving places. I didn't think it would. But after that, the next day I went to get some work done because I checked out of the hotel because I'm going to drive overnight from Orlando to Miami. I needed a place to work. I got to edit videos, got to do all this work. And where's the perfect place? Coffee shop. Yeah, no? The Orlando Library, because I know where it was. You can get free Wi-Fi and internet at the library. Support your local libraries. If you're not already doing that, support your local libraries. They help. Although, everyone in Florida seems to either have COVID or cough or constant cold because everyone's coughing everywhere all the time. And one person next to me just the entire time. Just blow your nose, dude. And don't touch me or anything I'm going to touch. But I spent 6 hours at the library. We walked away for a little bit to get lunch at a pizza place and come back to do work. But I also, unfortunately, did not really get as much work done as I wanted in that 6 hours. You would think, what? Why? How? How are you there for 6 hours? Do you think any work done? Because most of the time spent was downloading from the internet, you know, from my phone to the device, downloading from iCloud, videos of stand-ups, video of updates, you know, tour stuff that I've been doing. So all that stuff I had to get on the laptop. I spent hours just downloading terabytes of video off the free library Wi-Fi. I got a little bit of like assembling some of the edits done, but not as much as I really wanted to. So that night went to another open mic at the Falcon Bar. And this place I really liked. I dug it. I don't know what the motif for this place was. It was either hipster girl or riot girl. I don't know which one, but I liked it. It was my kind of atmosphere and my kind of place. But here's the thing that, I was still kind of in a antisocial mood, standoffish. I don't know. What was it? The city? Was it Orlando? Was it the other comedians? Was it the fact that I had to listen to comedians constantly open up their sets with admitting to being a pedophile or admitting to be a rapist? Why is this comedy? Why do you think this is going to be funny? You're not being clever. You're not being ironic. Like, you're just admitting to being an assailant. Why? What is the comedy supposed to be? Look how outrageous I am. Isn't that hilarious that I'm an outrageous rapist? No, it's not. There's nothing clever or funny about it.
My sleep's been shown on average. I woke up 65 times an hour. Yeah, you get that's mathematically impossible, right? Like, if you're awake 65 times in one 60-minute period, you're not sleeping. It's Netflix with your eyes closed. By the way, I don't want to be rude, my wonderfully singing friend, but can you not stand in front of the camera right behind your head? Thank you. You're blocking the entire thing. That's okay. Don't worry. Awesome job. All right. Now we made it weird. Yay! White guy. White guy told a black person to move to the bar. This is... Now I'm going to throw what bathroom to use next. Okay. This got uncomfortable, didn't it? Especially since I had the haircut of a background actor from American History X. I look like I have a very well rehearsed alibi for January 6th. I look like if I told you two to get hung safe, you would think it was a threat. Yeah.
Comedians just ruining the few audience members that are there. But after I did my set, my friend Frim from Boston Doctors called me to check in, and he, you know, that lightened my mood because I'm like, oh, I get to talk to my friend. But he said something that hit me. Is all of this worth it for just open mics? I'm not just doing open mics. I'm doing book shows. I had some really great shows. Yeah, there's some bad ones. Even if they weren't open mics, even if every show was booked, there is not 100% guarantee that all of them would be good shows. There would probably still be bad shows with audiences, or bad shows that didn't have audiences, making it a bad show. But I just said it to him, it's really more the experience. A, I'm doing a couple other things in here. One, I'm making an experience. Two, I'm trying to learn about the cities and the people that live in for my guests who come on these duck tours, and I have something to relate to them, something genuine and authentic that I can tell them. Also, I'm trying to refoster the connections with other comedians that I made during the pandemic doing Zoom shows. What has bothered me is the comedians that I'm friends with in towns, I haven't got to see them. I've talked to them. Some of them have hooked me up with great shows and great contacts, but they didn't come out to the show because they have their own things going on, or they were busy and we couldn't just hang out outside of the show. So that's the disappointing part, is I don't want my comedian friends to think that I'm just reaching out to them to take advantage of them for bookings. I generally want to hang out with them. And so far, I haven't really had any time, hangout time with other comedians. Although in LA, I'll have plenty of time. So I hopefully, when I get to LA, a lot of my LA comedian friends, I'll be able to spend time with them. We shall see. But as I was leaving, one of the comedians there came up to me and was like, hey, you know, nice hoodie. I was wearing my Slackers hoodie, you know, their New York ska band, the Slackers. And I was like, oh, yeah, thanks, man. We kind of talked about punk and ska for a little bit. Talked about the dog, you know. It was nice somebody reached out. And we started talking for a little bit. And I was like, sorry, but I'm on my way out the door. I'll be back in town Saturday. I was like, oh, are you doing Bash and Bull? I was like, yeah. He goes, I'm on that show, too. I'll see you there. So that was nice. Get in the car, drive overnight. We made it as far as Fort Lauderdale, Dania Beach, that kind of area. Got in a hotel. So that wake up. Do an open mic at a cultural center, like a you know, community center. I should have known better walking into this scenario. I knew what it was. I thought maybe, because it's a mixed open mic, so it's musicians, it's poets, comedians. They're never comedians at these things, and I should have known better, but that's okay. I don't mind being the only comedian at the thing, because usually I can handle myself. Comedy's not for every atmosphere. It's also not a great atmosphere when there's 8 people in the audience. Like, I showed up there, and first off, it's outdoors, which I wasn't expecting. It's not a problem. I believe comedy can be done outdoors. A lot of comedians don't. They don't. They think that outdoors is the bane of comedy. But then Zoom happened, and we did outdoor comedy. Anyway, I've done tons of outdoor shows. I ran outdoor shows. I love outdoor shows. I have no problem with outdoor shows.
Secondly, no one pulled anyone out of a burning building, so no one rescued anybody. I do love my dog. She's very smart. She helped me out with things. Sleeping mostly. It's basically what she does. She watches over my sleep. That's why I don't need her right here. We are traveling the country right now. We have a 3-month road trip from Boston to LA and back. I'm in Miami, or Fort Lauderdale? Where? Pompano. I've been on the road so much I have no idea where I'm at most of the time. I was really thinking about it the other day. It's like somebody asked me, he's like, what city are you in? I'm like, I don't know. It's warm, but it was raining yesterday, so I don't know. But we're on this road trip because let's be honest, I'm currently on a comedy tour sponsored by Massachusetts Unemployment. I am a full-time comedian, which means I'm unemployed. Basically, that's what it is. Here I am. Yay!
First off, get there. There's nobody else there. Just a backing band that's that's getting set up, and the host who's playing with the backing band, and they're doing songs, and like nobody's showing up, and I'm like, I'm not going up there to do comedy for nobody. So after over an hour of waiting around, a couple people started trickling in. I thought this is the best it's gonna get. So I finally go up. No good introduction. Starting right off the bat. It's just weird and awkward. So I just doubled down and made it more weird and awkward. So then we did an open mic. So we, like, sister did anything. I mean, she came along with me because checking out of the hotel, we drove overnight from Miami to Key West. But when we went to Miami, could not find a single accurate information about comedy. I mean, I know there's a club there called the Villain Theater because I did that online, but they didn't respond to any of my emails about booking, which is upsetting. But I had a lot of friends in Miami, and I finally got a hold of one of them. I was like, hey, what's going on in town? And my friend Allison McCoy was like, oh, there's this tonight, and this tonight. Because I showed up at one place, and their website says there's comedy there. Their social media says there's comedy there. And in fact, not only is there not just an open mic, it's a comedy show and then an open mic afterwards. So there should be a booked show after beforehand. I show up there. Bartender doesn't know anything that's going on. Confused at it. He goes, our open mic is on Thursday. It's on Tuesdays. It's Thursday. I'm like, well, it says right here it's supposed to be a comedy show and then an open mic. And he's like, I don't know what you're talking about. And of course, I told this to Allison. She's like, yeah, that sounds like Miami. Goes back, more just unreliability. Like, it was so hard planning all this stuff because it was impossible finding all this information 3 months out. And given that I'm there the day of, it's even harder to find the information to do these things. I finally go out to one of them. I find this place, really nice little, small little place. And I'm still in a funk, you know, and I'm agitated. Driving around trying to figure things out, trying to find places to go, trying to do comedy. And I'm just shitty. I mean, I find the host of the thing, and his show is exactly what I described as the other place. It's a booked comedy show and then an open mic afterwards. So it's like hours upon hours of comedy. Like, the book show went too long. The open mic went too long. I guess in Miami, they're like, yeah, we'll go all night long. We don't care.
Sister's a very cute name for a dog until you lose her. Then you gotta walk around the neighborhood going, have you guys seen my sister? She got out of her cage trying to eat a rat. Why are you calling the police? Put the phone down. Let me explain. When you have a dog, a lot of people ask you, is she a rescue? And of course, if you tell them they're a rescue, what do they say? Who rescued who? I hate that sentence. People say that. You know why I hate it? First off, it's whom, bitch. Secondly, no one pulled anyone out of a burning building, so no one rescued anybody. She is a service dog, but she was originally a foster. I picked her up during the pandemic. She is my pandemic puppy. I know. Here's the thing, though. I got it during the pandemic, and I was like, oh my God, I can't believe you rescued that dog during COVID. I was like, I didn't do it for altruism. I did it because I needed someone else to talk to besides my roommate. And that's not heroic. That gets you banned from PetSmart.
I introduce myself to the host. I get the 401 on, everything's going on. I go outside and I wait. You know, I do the sign up and I wait. And I'll say this. There was another comedian who was on the show that came out to me, introduced himself, shook my hand, asked me about me, talked to me, really great energy, positive dude. And I was like, oh, are you hosting this? Are you involved? He's like, no, I'm just on the show, man. Just coming out to talk to you, dude. I was like, all right. It was nice to have somebody reached out and make conversation with me. And I thanked him afterwards. Like, dude, I was in a bad mood, and you just being friendly helped me out. I actually end up, you know, having great conversations with two other comedians who are also visiting from out of town. One from New York, one from LA. So we made other connections. So, you know, it was nice to be able to kind of compare notes on traveling with other comedians. You know, their experience, my experience, talk about other scenes and stuff. And it just felt good to be like, it's one of the things I love about doing comedy is when after the show's done, just sitting outside and just smoking cigarettes and talking about comedy, riffing and joking, talking about our scene and your scene and my what's going on in my world of comedy and my jokes and this and that and comparing notes and stuff. And it felt good. It felt good. I will say before that open mic, though, I went out and got a Cubana. I went to Old Havana, which I'm assuming it's by the name a classic Cuban place. And when sister and I got there, I looked at it and I was like, this is too small, too tight. I don't feel like being here. I was back earlier when I was in kind of still my funk. So I just ordered it to go. We go down the street to a little park. It's impossible to try and find a park in Miami. I went to one park and it was just a parking lot. I'm in Miami and I decided to get a sandwich. I wanted to get a Cubano and I should have done more research. I Googled best Cubano in Miami and I took the first thing. Right now we're in down the street from, I left. It was a place called Old Havana, which I'm like, oh, that sounds like it would be the original place. It's probably not. I should have done more research. I'm pretty sure even Alton Brown did a whole video of testing out Cubano sandwiches and Cuban sandwiches while he was on tour. And I should have re-referred to that. But I didn't feel like being in the place. It was very busy and loud. And sister's with me, and I just didn't want to be in the atmosphere. So we ordered it to go. So here we are. It comes with a lot of matchstick potatoes chip. Like, this is not even like fries. These are matchstick potatoes. I mean, they're small and thin, but let's get a good look at that sandwich. Here we go. It's good. The pork roast, the roasted pork is too roasted. It's overcooked. I could use some more pickles. But otherwise, it's fine. Tastes like every other Cuban sandwich that I've had. Nothing more special. But we came down here to this park. Which, by the way, when somebody wants to go, extra napkins. I shouldn't have to ask for that. Like, you gave me one of those little plastic fork knife packages that comes with one napkin. I'm eating a sandwich. Come on, extra napkins. Let's go. Come on. How many restaurants do you go to where you order a sandwich or something you eat with your hands and you use one napkin?
A couple blocks away.
Anyway. I don't need a whole package of napkins. But, you know, a couple extra. Real napkins. Not this tissue. Now I've eaten the full thing. And I have opinions. First off, the bread's fine. Not as fresh as I would like to be. Toasted perfectly.
A funny sounding name. So I should probably.
Did not feel like fresh.
Read up and learn something more about it. Bread.
Here's what it is. The sandwich was just fine. It was just fine. It was not. It was far from the best Cuban sandwich I've ever had. It's far from the worst. It was just as good as every other Cuban sandwich that I've gotten in every other city. Of course, as soon as I get the sandwich and I'm walking down the street, every place says best Cuban sandwich in town. Best Cuban sandwich. The original Cuban sandwich. I'm pretty sure even the McDonald's next door to Old Havana said best Cuban sandwich in town. Which, by the way, I would love to see a McDonald's Cuban sandwich. I would definitely want to know what that is. It's starting to drizzle here a little bit. It looks like it's going to be a little light rain off and on. In this park. Kind of had to wait till somebody on the other side of this monument here left to record this video. That's why I ate half the sandwich before I got to the video because I was too nervous to record the video while somebody was in earshot. So anyway, after the open mic and talking to all the comedians and hanging out and staying way too late, I drive overnight to Key West where I have a spot on a show in front of an audience at a club. Just the getting there. Now, I'm sure the drive along the Florida Keys is beautiful and gorgeous, and there's wonderful views. When you do it at night, it's just that it's being surrounded by a terrifying abyss of blackness and nothingness. But we got there pretty early in the morning, sister and I did some tour stuff, went to the buoy that marks the most southernmost point in. Got your course, and they lean into that southernmost restaurant, southernmost Cubana, southernmost mojito, southernmost spot in the U.S., the southernmost military base, southernmost iguana resting place. Like, it was everything there. It was southernmost. They really leaned into it. It's not what I thought it was going to be. It's a cute little quaint community. Like, everybody was nice and polite, and you walk down the street, and people are like, hi. Hey, how you doing? Well, good. Maybe because they're on vacation. Maybe because they're rich people and they're all surrounded by their own other rich white people and they assume I'm that too. I don't know. But as the day progressed on, unfortunately, the weather turned and it was just torrential downpours all day. So luckily I got to Comedy Key West, club owned by former Boston comedian Tom Dustin. The great new documentary that comedian Joe List produced about Tom Dustin and his life and life in Key West. So that's out there, or soon to be out there, so look for that. But, you know, Tom always intimidated me when he was in Boston, because he's got an attitude. Like, he's got, you know, he's very Boston. He's very aggressive. When I was there in Key West with him, he was nice and you know, personal. He's still a little bit high-strung in an aggressive way, not in a, like, anxiety way, but it was nicer. You know, I wouldn't say we were friends because we barely knew each other. I'm surprised he even, you know, responded to my email or my message that I sent him. But he was very welcoming. Of course, my friend James Scott Patterson also lives down there now, and I got to see him and hang out with him and watch his. He has this really brilliant Hemingway, but the funny way. This one-man hour-long show about Ernest Hemingway, because he lived in Key West for a long time. He has a long heritage. I wanted to go to the Hemingway house and do that touristy thing, but I didn't. But it's interesting seeing, I've seen the trolley company in a couple of different cities now. And we have them in Boston, these trolley things. You hop on, hop off. That's their big selling point. Buy a day pass, get on it, and get off anywhere you want all day for one price. And it's a full-on bus. You know, it's green and orange, and it looks like a cute little, like, streetcar in Boston. In other cities, it's not a trolley. I think in Fort Lauderdale, it was basically, like, you would see it, like, the Universal lot doing a tour there. And then in Key West, it was basically a golf cart, just towing other golf carts around. So it's nice to see this big, huge franchised company have different vehicles in different cities, but still trying to make them the same. But the show was fine. It was packed. It was a good audience. Could have been better. That's not my saying. I think I did okay. I don't think the audience liked me very much.
I look like if I told you to get home safely, you would think it's a sarcastic threat. All I'm trying to do is convince people that every waking moment that this is a genetic defect and not a political statement. You know what I'm talking about. I am going around the country right now with my dog. My dog's name is Sister. I know, it's a very cute name for a dog until you lose her. Then you gotta walk around the neighborhood going, "Have you guys seen my sister? She got out of her cage trying to eat a rat. Why are you calling the police? Put the phone down. Let me explain."
But Tom, afterwards, I was like, "Hey, man, I thought I could have done better. I'm sorry." And he's like, "No, you did fine. You had a good couple of pops. This audience was weird. I had problems with them. Everybody had problems with them. I had to kick somebody out," or they got up. And I think in the middle of the show, a group of people in the front row just got up and huff and puffed their way out. It's one of those scenarios where I feel like, I think I was under a lot of pressure because I wanted to impress Tom. So I wanted my set to kill, and I didn't kill. I did fine. But I feel like I could have done better. And he was like, "No, it's not you, man. You're fine. You know, you did what you do, and you got a couple of good laughs out of them for people that didn't really, for some reason, wanted to laugh. They were a little bit weird." And I get it, because you're looking at the audience. There are people from all around the country, so who knows where they're from. A lot of people there, you could see there was people who are clearly parents there with their kids, not like young children, like they're adult kids. So I guess it's a little bit weird to be in an environment and laugh at certain things because your parents and kids are there. You don't know what you want them to know that you laughed at. So I can get how it is a weird audience place. Like he was telling me that sometimes it's like that. The audience is such a hodgepodge of different people from all around. You know, there's some locals, but it's not many locals. It's one of the only few things to do there. It's the only comedy place. But here's the good thing. I met a guy who owns a sub shop, like right next door, a couple doors down from Tom, that loves the club and loves comedy, is a really cool guy because he is from Baltimore. Yeah. I'm wearing an O's hat. He's wearing a Ravens hat. We made friends real quick. Super cool guy. Great sandwiches. Oh, I went over. I'm like, I'm definitely going to support this place because, A, Baltimore fan. But more importantly, you're friends with Tom. So, you know, you support him. I support you, you know? And oh, my God, the sandwich is fantastic. Oh, and then he gave me a bunch of lunch meat ends for sister to have and enjoy. Yeah, we were soaked. She was soaked all day. It was just nonstop getting rained on. But it was great. It was a good time. And then after the night ended, the show ended, got in the car, and left town. And I tried to get back to the mainland before I had to pull over and take a nap, and it, I don't think I didn't quite make it. Made it like an hour. Like, it's over a two-hour drive. And that's a two-hour drive on a single-lane highway. You know, cars go one lane going each way. And if you get stuck behind somebody who's doing 5-10 miles under the speed limit, it's grueling. And that was exactly what happened. Why is everyone in Florida driving 5-10 miles under the speed limit? Why? I thought they were all be speeding. They're not. The farther south you go, by the way, the slower they get. I don't know what's going on. I'm a little bit of an aggressive driver. I like the speed. I want to do 10 miles over the speed limit, and I'm fine with that. If you want to, and I'll get in the left lane, I'll just go. If you want to get around me, get around me. That's fine. If you flash me, I'll move. If I see you coming, I'll move over. I'll let you through. I don't care. That's the best thing about Jersey. Every time I'm coming down I-95 and I get in Jersey, I get on the turnpike, I put the cruise control at 80 and I just drive and I don't worry about anything and nobody gets in my way. That's New Jersey, not Florida. Definitely not Florida. But I had to try and get back to Orlando for my show, Bash and Bull. It's a British pub. By the way, I feel bad. My buddy, Frim, he loves going to Key West because he's super hippie. But he told me a couple of things to go visit, and I didn't because the rain. But anyway, back to Orlando part two. So I find a hotel, and on my feed of things came Podfast Expo. It's a very corporatized convention for podcasters, and I got a free ticket to it. So checked into the hotel, got some breakfast. But sister to bed, and I went over to check it out because it's literally the hotel next to the hotel I'm staying at. I could walk right over to it. So I did, and I didn't mean to spend all afternoon there because I really wanted to go take a nap and shower and get ready for my show. Luckily, I did shower before going to it, but I kind of wanted to shower and shave again before the show, which I didn't get the chance to shower. So I went, re-shower and shave. So I went a little unshaved to the show. But the Podfest Expo was okay. All that corporate buzzword, PR marketing kind of people who call themselves gurus. Some good vendors there, like Shure microphones. I love Shure microphones. I think they're great microphones. I say that as I'm currently wearing a Rode microphone, but Shure has a replacement for this. They have something exactly like this now, but they didn't when I bought this. And I bought this as the used second generation Gallium and cheaper. But anyway, I would love to have the Shure microphone version of the Rode wireless. If Shure wants to send me one, I'd be glad to try it out and review it. Anyway, the expo was kind of cool there. So Shure microphones were there. I talked to Shure rep. There's the network that hosts one of my favorite podcasts, Chris DeMakes a podcast. He's the lead singer of the band Less Than Jake. He has a podcast where he talks about music with people. I love the podcast and I love Less Than Jake. And I got to talk to the guy that runs that label and just thank him for supporting one of my favorite artists. I talked to my podcast, you know, now is with the Big Comedy Network, but it was, you know, before I self-hosted it, but I used, at some point after creating my RSS, I used a Blueberry plugin on a WordPress-built site to help continue my RSS feed for this podcast. And I got to talk to one of the tech support guys that I had to talk to all the time when there was problems. I was like, you're Chris! Oh my God, I'm so, what do you really do? He's like, oh my God. So there's some cool things and some cool technology. A lot of talk about AI. A lot of, not in a good way. A lot of AI is going to change your life. AI is going to make your podcasting better. A little too much embracing AI, artificial intelligence. I think it could be a good tool to be utilized for certain aspects of things, certain stuff, but they talked about it entirely too much. Luckily, nobody talked about it like doing like AI voices or AI characters or AI, any of that stuff. Corridor Crew, which is one of my favorite YouTube channels, a bunch of VFX artists living in LA, did a really great episode talking about in the early day, like a year or two ago, of AI generated voice that can copy a voice just by using, you know, you read a script, and boom, it recreates a voice to a T. It's only gotten more accurate now. So then the other thing about this expo was, because it's comedies, there was some people who run some comedy shows, I guess in LA? They seem to be all over the place. You know, they did a couple of panels about how to inject comedy into your podcast and, you know, basically veiled things at how to create an improv game in conjunction with your podcast or whatever. But they decided to do an open mic at this convention, at this PodFest Expo. So stage time. So I signed up for it. And it is literally, I'm the only one who's the comedian. I mean, some people have maybe done a couple open mics. Most of the people there have never done comedy before. I mean, that's fine. It was a very supportive and welcoming audience. Maybe a little too supportive.
Give it up for Eileen. Jack. Yeah. If I had a nickel for every time I had to follow a crying white woman, I would still lose half of it in the divorce. So this is nice. I love this. It's beautiful. I love performing in front of advertisements. This is great. I love it. I do comedy across the country, and sometimes I'm always worried about what's behind me when I do comedy. Because sometimes I have to do comedy places like VFW halls or Knights of Columbus. Or certain clubs around the country for some reason happen to have a giant American flag against the backdrop of the stage. And I'm always worried about doing comedy in front of an American flag. Because if you see me standing in front of an American flag, shouting into a microphone, with this haircut, I look like Breitbart stock photos. From American History X. I look as racist as her accent sounded. I look like I have a very well rehearsed alibi for January 6th. I look like if I told Steve to get home safely, he would think it was a threat.
They liked some, I'm surprised that they liked stuff, you know, dirty jokes as much as that audience did. I'm surprised. I thought there'd be a little more pearl clutching. There wasn't. Somebody at one point asked, like, are we allowed to curse on this? Because none of the comedians are cursed. And then somebody said, fuck. And they were like, oh, okay. And everyone laughed hysterically at it. My set went fine. I enjoyed it. Unfortunately, it went pretty late and I needed to rush home or to the hotel, take care of sister. And then, you know, get changed and went to my show. The show was great, by the way. Bull and Bush was awesome. Everyone talked about the show. Thank God my friend Larry set me up for that show. It was such a good time. Everybody was super friendly and cool there. The audience, it's a surprise comedy show, but yet the host, Ross, does this great job of just reeling people in. He's also funny, so it helps that he goes out there, starts to show off with being funny, with jokes, getting people involved, letting them know what's going on, and doing a good job of getting everyone on the same page and on board with what's about to happen. So he sets all the comedians up for success. So he doesn't do too much time in between comedians because he didn't need to because everyone crushed pretty much. He didn't have to reset the room. He didn't have to bring people back. Everyone did a great job on the show because they had the ability to succeed because Ross, the host, put them in a place to succeed because he's a good comedian that set up the room right. And that's all you need to do as a host is just make people feel welcomed. Don't make it weird. Too many hosts make it weird.
I just turned 43, which means I had a very important meeting with my doctor, the very important procedure where he comes in, takes his finger, and puts in the... Yeah, that's the last time I get to that dentist. And he's right here, guys. That's... Anyone away from it, like he was very gentle, but just change gloves between procedures next time, okay? It's like I can still taste it a little bit, you know? Okay.
enjoyed the show immensely. I talked to and hung out with comedians over there. And there is this one comedian, Amy. She runs a show in town. And my friend Larry and I were going to go to it the first time I was in Orlando, but I didn't go to it because I had to stay in Charlton, South Carolina. On that Saturday, she does a show called Psych, where a comedian comes out and does a set. And then she, who is a professional therapist, look out for her to be a guest on the podcast soon, will diagnose them based on their set, and they go through a whole therapy session with the audience, and they ask questions, and I love this show. I hope to be on it someday. I wanted to go check it out, but that didn't work out because there was some, she was doing the show in Orlando. She does it around. She travels with it. And I talked to her about, oh, this is the thing you should be doing, traveling more. She was like, well, I only kind of break even when I do the show. I was like, well, that's the thing. You shouldn't be breaking even. You do this at medical conventions and have the convention pay you for it. So you pay your airfare, they have the space already, so you don't have to pay for the space. It's built into the cost of people's tickets. It's part of the entertainment package, so all they have to do is just cut you a check. Your traveling things are included, then you can also write those travel costs off. So her and I may have a conversation about how to do this more financially better. I am not a smart person when it comes to finances, but she should be able to make money off the show because it's a good show. I think it is. I think the premise is original and different and cool. So the next day after the show, I had to do laundry. So I got to, what, the 18th? No, the 21st. Got it through it from January 3rd to January 21st. So it was that 18 days. Got 18 days before I needed to do laundry. Stayed at the hotel after I checked out. They let me, the guy at the front desk gave me a card. So here, I'll slide you this card, even though you're checked out, you can get in the laundry room. And sat down and did some free Wi-Fi work, editing these podcasts and stuff. That's been one of the things that I've been learned is how to get work done and when I can get it done. Time management is incredibly important for this podcast, or for this trip, rather, to get these podcasts done, because if I'm just wasting time, I'm wasting time driving. I can't do things while I'm driving. So that's just dead time. So I have to maximize my time. But there's times where I need things like uploading a file to the servers for Big Comedy Network. I need Wi-Fi. That sometimes uploading those files take time. But more importantly, when I'm editing it, I have to render out videos. This is nerdy video editing talk, but basically I have to save the file. And saving the file basically writes it. So depending, my laptop speeds can only be so fast. So sometimes it's a one-to-one ratio. So if I make a 40-minute video, it takes 40 minutes to save it. It cannot be interrupted. And I accidentally interrupted it a couple times at the Orlando Library. And when I was at Orlando at the thing, I didn't leave the hotel until 4 in the afternoon to start driving towards New Orleans. I wanted to go to Tallahassee or Pensacola, and then I looked up open mics and shows on Sunday in that part of Florida, and there was, again, nothing. I just decided to say, well, this is the night of nothing but driving. We drove to New Orleans. But I had to leave the laptop open and rendering video because I couldn't sit there for another 3 hours. Not that the file was 3 hours. Not that the podcast episode was 3 hours. But the render time took 3 hours because I accidentally recorded footage in 4K and it's too big and takes forever. And it's only on my laptop. My desktop can handle these things a little bit better, but my laptop, it doesn't. Handles things well enough. And I've had to learn how to do proxy files, which basically makes a smaller, low-res version of the file to be able to use editing. That way you can move faster while editing instead of your computer lagging. But to render that file into a proxy also takes time. So there's sometimes where I set down, all right, I got hours to work on this. Let me do this. Create proxy. 3 hour render time. All right, fuck, I have nothing to do for 3 hours now. I worked for 10 minutes. So I did leave the laptop open and running. Of course, I'm doing everything to an external hard drive. So I got to keep that plugged in, which creates more anxiety if just falling out. Because once it falls out, everything's lost and you got to start over again. So I'm driving and just trying to keep an eye on the laptop in the back seat while it's rendering, which also not plugged in, so I have to worry about battery power. Since then, I bought a power inverter, so I can now, it's basically, you plug in the cigarette lighter, and then you can plug in regular things into it. And that, by the way, charges my laptop very quickly. I don't know what it's doing, why that 100-watt power inverter can charge my laptop faster than plugged into the Orlando library. But so I bought one of those at a Buc-ee's. I went to a Buc-ee's and rested overnight. But I found a power inverter for like $25 from there, which I saw at other truck stops, and I should have bought it. I've been thinking to myself that I need to buy a power inverter for this trip. But I'm like, everything I own that plugs in cigarette lighter that I need power. The only thing I have that I can't charge off the cigarette lighter is the laptop, and I can't use the laptop in the car. So there may be a little more having to, now I have the ability to do it in the car, and now it's become a necessary need, so. So now I have the ability to run the laptop in the car. If I need to do it again. I'll probably never have to do it again, but I now have it. You know what? Power inverters are cheap now. It's $25. Why not own one? Just in case. This whole trip is the definition of why you should be worried for and be prepared for just in case.